The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
I'm joined this morning by Peter Leonard, barrister and co-host of the Fifth Court podcast, and Hazel Chew, former Lord Mayor of Dublin and Green Party councillor. And there's been a lot of attention over the past, what feels like 16 years, but is actually, I think, only a little over a week or so, on the new administration in the US and what it is doing. We've just most recently heard that a judge has now blocked Trump's order to put USAID workers on leave. There's still a big drive to try to make redundant huge swathes of the federal workforce. There's a whole series of other actions stacking up from the administration. But we're beginning to see the first of those having an impact on these shores, both in terms of the policies of companies in Ireland and in terms of Ireland having to respond to things that Trump is doing. The first, or rather the second of those, Peter, we're hearing this morning and the reports throughout the media that the sanctions on the International Criminal Court brought in by Trump, there is now 80 nation states who have criticised them, and we are amongst that list.
Yeah, no, and we've been very strong in relation to that. This is typical of Trump in his first 20 days, making all these huge decisions that have huge international implications. Obviously, when Netanyahu came to the White House, you know, there was going to be this is in keeping with the treatment he got and the comments in relation to Gaza. So, as we know, in November last year, Karim Khan, who's the prosecutor of the ICC, he issued arrest warrants for Netanyahu and the defense minister at the time, Yoav Gallant, and also for the head of Hamas, who was Mohammed Dieff, who the Israelis say has been killed in the conflict. So, Trump is pushing back against that. But Simon Harris is very strong. There was a motion issued by a number of countries yesterday, and all the international players in NATO have come out in support of this and have said you can't sanction the ICC.
Can I ask on this, Peter, is this one of those things where the great and the good around the world clutch their pearls, but it is ultimately insignificant? Does the International Criminal Court matter?
Well, it does matter. It does matter. It doesn't, I mean, it's not attached to a nation state. It doesn't have a police force or an army to give effect to decisions of the ICC. I mean, an arrest warrant for Netanyahu, what does that mean? You know, I mean, who's going to arrest him? If he goes into a certain country that's sympathetic, maybe that could happen, but it's highly unlikely. It has had an impact in countries like the former Yugoslavia, for example, where there was a number of war criminals identified over the years. You will recall last year, was it last year or maybe late the year before, Bliana Nigrolia, the Irish barrister who was representing South Africa in terms of making the case. And while it doesn't have an impact, the PR impact of that on Israel, Israel did not like it. They did not like the commentary that she was giving to the court in terms of the application that was being made. And obviously, issuing arrest warrants for Netanyahu is something they don't like as well. So it does have an impact at that level.
And presumably it has an impact as well.
I don't know.
It has an impact as well, I would imagine, in terms of the method of approach of collegiate joint effort towards mutual benefit that has been the norm over the last 20 or 30 years. When you add in the International Criminal Court, when you add in the World Health Organization, when you add in the withdrawal from pre-established trade agreements with Canada and with Mexico, it is further evidence of America's desire to remove itself from any club that it's in.
Yes, and I mean, there is this, you know, the concept of international law, and international law does exist. And everybody will say, well, we're within international law, but are you? You need a court to determine that. So that's why the ICC is very important. But yes, I mean, this seems to be the American attitude at the moment. Those international agreements that have been built up over years and that have worked really to bring international stability. America appears to be pulling back. But is he really going to do it? Who knows? I mean, there's a lot of talk in the first 20 days as diplomacy continues with the pushback from all these nation states. It'll be interesting to see how it works out.
And we're beginning to see it trickle across the water now, because there's reports today that I think the Examiner is running a story that Accenture across the globe, which means the Irish operation as well, have abandoned diversity, equality and inclusivity as a target.
Well, the question is, did they ever really do it properly in the first place? And on, like, well, we look at diversity inclusion targets from big corporations, and it's always been it's always been greenwashing. It's there for people to say, hey, we have this program, but did they really apply it? Look at why they were doing it. A lot of times it was for the bottom line. It was for a marketing exercise. And
what Accenture say is that the reason that they have pulled back from it in part is the new administration in the US and the executive orders that Donald Trump has signed in respect of DEI. But in other part, they say, we have almost achieved those targets. We have 40+% 41 or 42% representation of women. Sure, you're more or less at the 50-50. We pretty much can call it a job done. I'm paraphrasing, but that's their statement.
I'm sorry, I call bullshit on that, because at the end of the day, you can, as a private company, again, you can say, oh, I have reached 40% targets. But that is that 40% on your board level? Is it across managerial level? Or is it the case that you just happen to contract some workers in and say, hey, we've reached that 40%? And the pushback saying, oh, this is because US regulation coming down the line. I'm sorry, but Trump has proved, and Peter alluded to this, that in the first 20 days, the man has very much gone out there to show US will be, I guess, a law upon itself. The plan that he has suggested is pure and simple ethnic cleansing when it comes to Palestine. And when you have private companies then going back and say, yes, yes, we must follow these regulations coming to the White House, this is exactly the time where you go, no, we are a private operation. We actually get to control what we do with its with our company. Within, of course, the letter of the law, but programs like diversity and inclusion should be something that you're championing right now.
Doesn't that go to the heart of the reality of capitalism and of fiduciary responsibility directors? If you are a board of directors and you know if we do this, we have even the slightest negative impact on our capacity to make profit, we shouldn't be doing it. So there you go, we buckle.
And this is where you, and goes back to that phrase that we all talk about, that if people, if everyone rolls up their sleeves, or if everyone stands back when in the face of evil and does nothing, then it just continues, right? So this is a precipice where we, and this is a precipice we knew was coming, that if Trump was going to be in this White House, this is exactly what will happen. Yet everyone now is standing back going, well, let's let this happen. No, this is exactly the time from across us in the waters here, from any multinational, from any public body, we should be looking at going and pushing back.
Now, I would bet you dollars to donuts, Peter, Accenture may be the ones who have found themselves on the front of the papers first. But I bet if we look at 2025 annual reports from an awful lot of companies based in Ireland and compare them to 2024, the ESG targets and the DEI targets that were once there won't be when they put out their new reports.
Yeah, maybe they're the first just to come out and say it. We know all the tech bros who were there and in the inauguration, and they were all centre stage, and they all seem to be very supportive of Trump. So, yeah, so maybe this is the start of something. I mean, it is a very worrying development, I think. You know, I mean, major company like that, they have something like 800,000 employees throughout the world, 5,000 in Ireland. And the chief executive comes out and says, you know, they had really admirable targets. It was supposed to be 50-50% gender balance in terms of employment, a strong pitch to get women into managing director positions. And now that's been rolled back, or it would appear to have been rolled back. Now, the spin on it is that we've achieved those targets already.
Almost.
But yes, I would imagine that other tech companies and other major international American companies are going to follow suit. And that is a bad thing.
It's interesting as well, because some of the big private equity houses were making ESG, so environment, sustainability and governance, part of their metrics in terms of investment. I assume that goes out the window as well.
Yeah, well, it seems to be going out the window. I mean, again, you have to see how all of this plays out. I mean, I think there's been a lot of hot air, I know decisions have been taken, executive orders have been signed, but they have to be given effect to, and they have to play out over time. So let's see how it works out, because some of this is so crazy.
That is to suggest that this requires policy and legislation to occur. It's already occurring. Accenture is evidence that all it needs is to see the way the wind is blowing. We've seen it with Meta pulling back from all of their content moderation. We've seen now what's the norm on Elon Musk's Twitter. All of that is evidence of this happening, regardless of whether they pass legislation.
Yes, okay. I mean, yes, there can be a change of policy. But I would have thought that the natural progression will continue to occur. That's my own view.
Let me ask on that, Hazel, because one of the things that the Accenture CEO said was that we are now and have always been a meritocracy. And what people on the side of the argument against DEI will say is the opportunity remains 50-50. If you want to go for a job in Accenture, if you have the right qualifications, if you do well at the interview, you get in whether you're male or female. So what of DEI?
Absolutely. The argument, of course, will be that. But that's what we talked about when it came to elections and women quotas, female quotas. When we look at DEI, that argument will always present itself going, oh, if that candidate has the merit, of course we're going to hire them. But who does the hiring? At the end of the day, it's a board or a panel of the same people who will actually go, well, you know, like, I'm sorry, like to Peter's point about tech bros, when you have especially not in Accenture, but in other companies where you actually have a panel of tech bros, they will naturally hire tech bros. So, and diversity doesn't come into play then. And diversity should come into play. And ESG targets should come into play because that is what we need to move from. We've spent the last 10 years proper investment into those areas.
But sorry, let me continue to devil's advocate. That is to suggest that people, because of inbuilt sexism or prejudice, depending on what the minority is that they're dealing with, act in a way that is inimical to their own best interests. If I am running a company and I am hiring, you are saying I will hire a man rather than a woman to satisfy my prejudice, even if she's not the best candidate, even if he's not the best.
Oh, well, actually, yes. I'm sorry. I have been on enough panels where people go, a woman or a man, they're both at equal experience, equal. And the first thing, and it is never said, but one will always come out with, well, will she be around long enough? These are questions because it's like, will she be going on mat leave? Will we have her for enough hours? Does she have a care home? And those are the unspoken questions that come time and time again. And when you have a proper diversity program, what an inclusion program, what that challenges is the fact that those things, even if you're thinking about it, you have to move at the side because at the end of the day, it is based on merit. So the proper inclusion programs make people move their inherent prejudice aside and actually look at a candidate properly, which they don't usually.
Like, but it's your belief that the reason we don't have, take gender as a case in point, the prime reason we don't have a 50-50 split is an intrinsic prejudice on the part of the male hirers.
Yes. Not just male, actually, just to be very fair. So intrinsic bias from the person hiring. It could be male, it could be female, but their automatic presumption is, well, when it comes to a female, they may not be around.
But both genders are chauvinistic once they get the capacity to recruit.
I'm an equal opportunity chauvinist here speaking, but like it is. It's not coming from just men. It's coming from men and women who, when they hire, they will look at a woman differently or they will look at someone from perhaps a diverse background and go, well, do they fit in or will they fit into this environment? And I've seen it happen so many times.
Tech say, I don't believe DEI targets are legally mandated. So in essence, companies have always been able to pick and choose what they do and publicize. In the past, it was advantageous for them to trumpet DEI. And this, I suppose, is the issue. They are seeing it as advantageous now to do the opposite. Peter, you wanted to come in.
No, well, I suppose I was saying that, I mean, in order for equality to apply, in terms of gender equality, sometimes extra accommodations need to be given to women with children, etc. And I mean, these are very important considerations that have to be put in place. So inclusion policies are essential if you have targets of trying to get an equal gender balance. That's
so what do you do now?
Practical reality
if you're an Irish Indigenous company competing with a US multinational who has abandoned DEI, you know that DEI is going to be, because it, to some degree it may be costly to implement as you go about it. What do you do?
Well, I, to be honest, I just don't think there's any reality to that because I think you go for the best person. And I think, you know, I mean...
Hazel says you don't.
Well, I don't know whether I agree with her in relation to that. I do believe that you do need inclusion policies in order to achieve parity of esteem between the genders. I do believe in that. But I think that a company is not going to suddenly introduce this. I mean, I think a lot of this is window dressing to try and impress Trump, but I think it's going to get lost in time. If you look at, in the Irish Times today, there's two competing
Accenture has opinions. Literally just done it. Well, it took him a week.
Yes, But it's now is the time to make those noises. I mean, it's a PR campaign at the moment, Anton, I believe. I think in reality, you need the best employees and companies will need to be progressive to get in female employees.
Okay,
that's the bottom line.
We now have a situation where the US administration has pulled itself out of the World Health Organization, an organization that we as policy think is to be lauded. They have pulled themselves out of the climate accord, which again is something that we think is to be trumpeted. They are trying to mass fire or make redundant federal workers in a way that we think is egregious. I mean, I'm just talking basic standards of employment.
But if you look at...
Now, hang on for a minute. Where I'm leading to with all this is, what do we do when they then say, now, Micheál Martin, come on over here and stand beside us with a bowl of shamrock so that we can get your public imprimatur for who we are and what we do. What does Micheál Martin do?
Well, Micheál Martin is going to play politics and he's going to play realpolitik, which means go to the White House and go and, you know, he will go out and he'll give press conferences afterwards and say, well, I raised certain concerns and I talked about this, that and the other. But he will go in and try and do a diplomatic, you know, love in with Donald Trump in order to protect Irish interests. That's what he has to do as Taoiseach. I think that's the reality of the situation. There's a big piece from Dan Mulhall, former ambassador to America, and he's talking about, you know, maybe you might have to hold your nose on a couple of occasions, but you have to play realpolitik. It's very important for Ireland going forward. It's like the famous
realpolitik means park all of your morality and all that you believe in favor of kowtowing to an authority.
Well, again,
are you kowtowing when you go over? But that's the thing. Like,
I think the diplomatic spin, Anton.
I think Micheál Martin's job when he goes over is to make sure he, well, shows up for Ireland, but also be very firm on Ireland's stance. And he has been very firm when it comes to, and to be fair.
So what, criticise Donald Trump in public?
He has, well, there is
like the bishop at the inauguration?
There's an element of going over, giving the bowl of shamrock, but then there's also an element of going over and saying, listen, we stand with the ICC, ICC.
Yeah.
We stand with Palestinians across the world. And we also think that, you said being a close down.
Now, come on, Hazel. In what context in Washington can Micheál Martin say that without bringing down the ire of Trump and the entire administration on his head?
Well, I think there's a certain extent where he has been bringing down. I'm not defending Micheál Martin here, but I think he's a smart enough man to go over there and play proper diplomacy. And he can go over, give the bowl of shamrock, but still be able to represent our interests. But that is a tightrope he needs to walk.
Yeah,
if you're him, sorry, Peter, go ahead.
Well, just picking up on what Hazel says there, just the first item we discussed here today, Anton, Ireland has been quite strong on this ICC decision from the US. We've pushed back on that big time. So, I mean, that is in the background, do you know? But, I mean, I think when they sit down in the White House and there's the bowl of shamrock, it'll all be smiles and hugs and kisses and references to Doonbeg golf clubs. That's what they're going to do. I mean, it's soft power. Ireland has a little bit of that and we shouldn't throw it away.
Soft power and sucking up sound very similar.
Well, look, I mean, isn't that the... Look, I mean, it was a bit like, remember the famous Phil Hogan when we kind of jettisoned him as an EU commissioner? I mean, people weren't happy about what happened with Golfgate and all that sort of stuff, but there's realpolitik. Ireland has to look at the bigger picture all the time. So in fairness to Micheál Martin, it is a difficult one, but I think, you know, the national interest requires that at least you go over, you be pleasant, you play the game, you talk about... I mean, Enda Kenny was a great man for talking about All-Ireland tickets. I don't know what you talk about. It's gentle stuff. But in the background, Ireland has official positions. And in fairness to Simon Harris, I think he's been quite strong at the ICC. He needs to be. As Hazel says, we need to bring up our position in Palestine.
I should make clear that the invite has yet to come in. And this is one of the questions being speculated on by a number of analysts is whether or not there will be an invite and whether or not in the context we want there to be an invite. 53106, by the way, I should say, or 087-1400-106 if you want to get in touch. Text saying a lot of these companies who are moving away from DEI are afraid of losing US government contracts.
Mm.
We were talking diplomacy. In terms of diplomacy, Simon Harris has been quite critical of the ESB because the ESB chief has been quoted as saying, look, it's probably going to be next year or maybe a little bit after that, but everybody's going to have to pay more because of the storm. This said while people still haven't got their power back.
Yes, and he needs to be more than just critical. I think the government needs to take to task what has happened in light of the storm, because there were people, myself and Peter were just talking about how we have friends that are out in different parts that still don't have power. I texted a colleague of mine, a friend, last night, and she only got her power back in Leitrim, and she hadn't got any updates. And that, like, we're really lucky here in Dublin. We look at the storm and we go, oh, why did people, why did we cancel school? It's all, it was all just a bit of wind. But like, when you look at what people have had to suffer in rural Ireland, especially when it comes to this storm and previous storms, the SB needs to do better. And they need to do better in terms of their crisis management. But this whole, we're hiking up the tariffs so that we can do better, that's absolutely nonsense. Your profit margins last year alone shows that you don't need to do that. So provide a proper service and make sure that you actually have a crisis plan in place.
All of which sounds well and good, but surely any company which is in the job of maintaining infrastructure, if they have a goodly chunk of it smashed to bits, it's going to cost them a fortune to put it back in place. And where else do they get that fortune but from their customers?
The state. So I'm sorry, but that seems like a no-brainer. So at the end of the day,
but the state, like, doesn't find money at the end of a rainbow. All that means is we pay by proxy.
Come on. For election after election, especially the recent election, we've had the government parties talk about how we're in surplus. We talked about how many houses they're going to definitely pull out of thin air. We talked about how they were going to provide X, Y, Z in terms of upgrading a grid and provide a service. Provide that service you promised during an election.
No, but my point being, Hazel, if I am an ESB customer and a taxpayer, and you come to me and say, well, okay, we are going to hike your ESB bill. No, instead, we'll take it out of your taxes. I'm still paying for it.
You're still paying for it, but then that's up to a government that's mandated and people voted in to go, no, listen, all across other countries, you have, this is what I mean by crisis planning. So you have people crisis planning against climate change, climate resilience plan, as we call it. And there needs to be a climate resilience fund. This government needs to look at what we're about to get into when it comes to climate change and the weather effects coming, and go, okay, this climate resilience funds mean we, those affected by Storm Eowyn or whatever storm that's coming ahead, we will be protecting those customers.
Final word to you,
Well, just, I mean, I think the chief executive of the ESB kind of rushed out with a statement that, you know, we're going to have to charge customers for all the damage that's caused. I agree with you. I mean, it's a massive cost. And I suppose traditionally, I mean, I remember the famous, there was an insurance company that went under, and then all insurance policies were levied in order to cover for the fact that losses like that occurred.
The MPA, but was it?
The MPA, well, that's going back to the 80s, I think.
I think
back
still that far. That levy.
Yeah. So that's the kind of automatic response from business. However, the politicians are pushing back. This is an emergency. This is a crisis. I mean, we have funds.
Quinn being the other that we're paying a levy
Yes,
for,
Quinn. That's it. That's it. More recently.
Well, by the way, if you're sitting at home listening on a battery-powered radio still waiting for power to return, let us know, because it'd be interesting to see how many people are still in that position. I assume it is, in relative terms, it is a very small proportion of people who are in that position. I don't think that makes it any easier if you are in that position. 53106 or 087 1400 106. Thank you to Peter Leonard, barrister and co-host of the Fifth Court podcast, and Hazel Chew, former Lord Mayor of Dublin and Green Party councillor.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.